For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, Vol Nation. Welcome to another episode of Believe in Tennessee Football. I'm your host, as always, Kyler Kurverson with Reed Bacon. We have a special guest today. It is Dan Harrelson of Vols Wire for USA Today. We talk about his depth charts he's been putting out, defense and offense. Who is he thinking is going to start this year, especially at the quarterback position? We know that's a big question. And just getting to talk some ball. Great conversation with him, and super excited for this one. So let's jump into it.
By the game. Snap, the kick is in the air, and the kick this time is no, sir, Reed. No, sir, Reed. Final score, Tennessee 20, Florida 17. Pandemonium reigns.
Loads up, fires long for the end zone. The pass is going to be caught. Tennessee
wins!
Caught by Tennessee, Jawan Jennings. Jennings makes the catch in the end zone on the Hail Mary.
Down at the 35, to the 40, to the 45, to the 50, to the 45, to the 40, to the 35, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. What did he do? All he did was score. Joey Kent, touchdown on play number one.
Before we get into the show, got to shout out our number one sponsor at betonline.ag. They are the best place to place any bets. They always have best stats and news and odds, anything that you're looking for. You know, finals going on right now in the NBA. Baseball is in full swing, and that's the place to go. If you're looking to bet on anything, they already have odds up of NFL MVP next year. They have odds of Damian Lillard, where he might be traded. So anything that you could think of, that's where you need to go. So visit the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. So before every face-off, tip-off, or pitch, head over to betonline.ag today. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Okay, welcome in, everybody. We welcome a special guest today. It is Dan Harrelson. He is the managing editor for Vols Wire for USA Today. He also has a podcast of him by himself with Tennessee Two-A-Days. So welcome in, Dan. How are we doing?
I'm doing pretty well. I love this time of year. Of course, SEC Media Days is approaching. That means fall training camp's here, so you know how that goes. You've been through it, so it's just a fun time of the year, especially with COVID kind of in our rearview mirror, and maybe we'll have a actual real season this year or a normal season, so I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, no kidding. So before we get into any questions, tell the people where they can find you on social media, how they can follow you, all that kind of stuff, promote what you got.
Yeah, so I'm – at Twitter, I'm at Dan Harrelson and VolsWire.com. And you can also get there, VolsWire.USAToday.com and Tennessee Two-A-Days on SoundCloud and Apple iTunes.
Okay, great, great. So one of the big things why we wanted to bring you on, you do have these depth charts that you've been putting out. Now, you're on number 8 for defense and I think number 11 for offense. Is there a certain number that you're like, I got to stop updating, or is there, you know, a certain reason why you're like, hey, now I'm going to update because of what I saw from a coach in an interview, or maybe something you saw at practice? What is those updates? What do they mean when you do update that?
So, hey, it's like Mel Kiper and Todd McShay with all their mock drafts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's actually how I started this with like 1.0, 2.0, and like 8.0 now. But it was a lot. I started doing this last year, and it was a whole lot easier when the transfer portal was not like a huge deal. But now it's a huge deal. So I didn't put one out. I think like 2 weeks into spring training or spring practices, and I put another one out around July 1st time, and that's the most recent one, just because there was so much movement. And so I put that back out there, because looking at my notes here, Kamal Hayden, cornerback, he came from Auburn. DeJon Terry from Kansas. Another lineman, Caleb Tremblay from USC, Javonte Payton, wide receiver, Mississippi State, William Mohan, linebacker, Michigan to Tennessee, Juwan Mitchell, linebacker, Texas to UT, and then, of course, Joe Milton at the quarterback spot from Michigan. So a lot of movement. I just decided not to do it every single time, because I think when you do it like that, as much movement that we've seen with Tennessee, maybe some people don't really care as much. So I figured I'd throw it out there right before SEC media days.
Yeah, don't want to oversaturate the market. We'll say that. So I do want to start on the defensive side of the ball and go over the depth chart that you did put out, the 8.0.
Hey, Kyler, let me jump in just real quick. I want to ask before we go into kind of each position, Mr. Dan, where do you like, how do you kind of, is this like just your projection, or like where are you kind of coming up with some of these things, or is it just like who, like Kyler said earlier, maybe who you're talking with or who you're hearing stuff from, or like how are you coming up with some of these different ones?
Yeah, so look at last year with Jeremy Pruitt, he had the huge split safety coverage scheme, so it was kind of tailored to that. And now with Banks coming in, he does a variety of different things, so it's just kind of looking at Banks's history,
yeah,
and what they could do there with like 4-3 or a stack type look. He has a Viper position and a couple other things going on, so it's kind of tailored to what I've seen Banks do. And what I looked at Banks the most was at Illinois, and then his time at Penn State recently.
And so that's for scheme wise, but for player wise, when you're actually saying, hey, I think it's going to be, you know, Elijah Simmons at D tackle, or Aubrey Solomon, or, you know, Elijah Simmons at nose, Aubrey Solomon at D tackle, and then Tamari McDonald at Viper. Those are the ones you were kind of just trying to place almost, like, because that's what you're thinking.
Right. And okay. And to be honest, right now, it's kind of just plug and place based off the roster that we're able to see, and then what we were able to see during spring practices. And credit Josh Heupel and his coaching staff for opening up a practice, and then of course spring game. So you do get see a little bit about that, what they may do scheme wise. And, you know, Willie Martinez, he's back, so we know a little bit about what he likes to do. So
right.
I'll be honest with you, I'm more of an offensive guy. And so I put a lot of more, I've studied when Josh Heupel got hired in January, I've been studying his offense. I'm actually going to release a project on his offense pretty soon. I kind of went back to his different stops and really focused on that. But as far as the defense goes, I just kind of plug in place based off the UT football roster and Banks' history and what we got to see this spring.
Okay, cool. Okay, cool. Go ahead, Kyler. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're good. That's great. Great questions, honestly, to hear that side of it and what you're thinking, and the fact that this isn't just like a fluke thing. Like, you're studying what Tim Banks does, you're studying what Josh Heupel does, so there's a full understanding of what's going on. So that is definitely good to hear. One to start up front, you know, Reed mentioned a little bit, Aubrey Solomon at tackle, Elijah Simmons at nose. I'm thinking that was what is on everybody's mind, that those two are probably going to be the interior guys. And I wonder, and it, you know, this doesn't necessarily have to do with the depth chart, but if Emerson and Middleton, the two guys who just transferred, kind of got that same feeling where it's Elijah and it's Solomon and there's no one else. And that is probably the reason why they left and wanted to transfer, just because they're not getting that starting spot. I mean, would you say that's pretty accurate, Dan?
For the reason that they transferred, I guess.
Yeah, for the reason.
Yeah, I mean, I hated to see Emerson go, and because I think he would have been a pretty good body on defense, because we know how fast this offense is going to go, whether they score quick or they go three and out or get a quick first down, and then they have to punt after they can't get another first down. So this defense is going to be out there, and you really need those bodies like Darryl and a Greg Emerson type. So, yeah, I think the depth chart, too, maybe was not in their favor, because you look at Aubrey Solomon, Matthew Butler, I think he's
– See, that's who I was going to bring up, yeah.
Yeah, I love Matthew Butler. I'm glad he's been able to talk to the media a couple times last year, because he's really mature and he's just really setting in a good position for this season this year also. And I like him. I think they're going to need him this year for the depth purposes. But I think – a guy like Aubrey, you know, it's a big year for him. I mean, is he going to be an NFL-type guy? Can he improve his stock? So he's got that on his plate. But I think we'll probably see both Matthew Butler and a guy like Aubrey Solomon this year.
Let me jump in here, Kyler. And the other thing is, too, and that's a good question. I didn't know about the – if you think that's a reason that they may be transferred. But, I mean, really, we know that – I mean – as competitors, we all want to be the starter. But, like, when it comes to D-line, man, those guys are going to rotate so much that you're still going to get plenty of snaps and plenty of opportunities. So, you know, because I was going to jump in, like, it might not be Aubrey Solomon start. It might be Matthew Butler that starts. I mean, you know how D-line goes. I mean, they're both going to, you know, whatever. And maybe depends on who we're playing as well. But yeah, I guess that's what I wanted to hear is if you think it would, you know, maybe helped depth-wise. And I said on our podcast, I think Greg Emerson was the much better of the two. If it wasn't for injuries, I don't think the Darrell Middleton loss was that big of a deal, but that's just me.
I'll tell you another thing about Emerson. I think – see, if you look at Josh Heupel and his offenses over the years, he loves to put guys like Greg Emerson and Latrell Bumpus over on the offensive side, in whether it be short yardage, goal line, red zone. When the field is kind of shorter, he loves to do that. He did that a lot at UCF. And I a couple months ago, I put together some stats of some defensive guys that he put on offense from various situations. And I think Emerson was going to be used like that too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Has Emerson landed anywhere yet?
I don't think so.
Yeah, okay, I don't think so either. All right, Kyler, go ahead with some of your other –
yeah, I like that, the defensive guy going in a big package. I could definitely see Elijah Simmons doing that because some of the athleticism I saw from practice and talking with Cooper Mays and him just being like, dude, this guy is legit. Like, he is very good and very athletic, like sneaky athletic, that I think he could – Heupel could take advantage of that on the offensive side of the ball. But I always love big man getting a touchdown. So if he does that, it's awesome.
That's right.
So I'm excited about Juwan Mitchell. You know, you mentioned him earlier. You know, you have him as, you know, our starting Mike. And I love that. I think he was going to be the starter right away coming in. And it seems like with the amount of experience he has being at Texas, like, he's going to be not only the starter, but the leader of the defense. I mean, we haven't got to see him practice, but do you feel that way? Do you feel that, like, he's going to be the guy everyone turns to, not necessarily an older guy who's been there like Alante Taylor or some of these other guys who've been here for a while?
I think so, because he has experience, obviously, coming from Texas. And you look at the Mike spot, you have Jeremy Banks, who, you know, he's got experience too, but we're still waiting to see him kind of turn that corner since he was reinstated to the program. And then Solomon Page the third, he's another guy that can provide some depth there. But you look at Banks and Page, I just think a guy like Mitchell coming in, Power Five experience, I think he can bode well in the middle for Banks' scheme and this Tennessee defense.
question on that, that exact same thing. So I saw it. Now, if we're assuming they're going to run a 4-2-5, are you saying that our two linebackers will be Juwan Mitchell and then Aaron Willis? Or do you think that at some point we might see Jeremy Banks and Juwan Mitchell side by side? Because right. We're looking, if we do run the 4-2-5, only have two backers, and then obviously Tamarian McDonald probably playing the Viper, you know, coming down a little bit type deal. But yeah, I wanted to ask you that because I didn't know how you meant that on the depth chart.
Yeah, I can see that as far as the 4-2-5 look goes. But I think Beasley, I don't think we should count him out now since he's back on the team and everything. William Mohan, the other transfer we were talking about earlier, I think he can be in play too. You know, that's why it's so important for this fall camp is to first 10 practices go. I think you're going to see a lot of these positions, like these two linebackers, for schematic reasons, on top of quarterback and some other places on this depth chart to really figure things out. So I think right now it's just kind of putting guys down, like plugging from the roster, just kind of viewing it that way until we can finally see something concrete in fall camp.
Gotcha.
But I think Willis is definitely there with Beasley.
Okay.
Yeah. And into the, you know, DBs with Kamal Hayden and Brandon Turnage, you know, just being recent transfers and stuff like that, you don't necessarily have them at starting anywhere. Do you think they might have some roles coming in, you know, be able to take over some of those positions, maybe the nickel with Kamal Hayden, you know, maybe being a starting corner with Turnage? I mean, obviously we do have Burrell and Kenneth George Jr. and Alante Taylor at corner, but do you think those guys have a chance of really seeing some time?
Yeah, I think so. I think, once again, depth is a huge thing this year, just because – and somebody asked me the other day, what do you think about this defense? I mean, the transfer portal, we see guys like Toa Toa, Crouch, other guys leave the program, Emerson, Middleton. And I think Heupel's done a pretty good job bringing in these transfers like Turnage and Trembley and some other guys just throughout the roster. But at the end of the day, and it's kind of a lazy answer, but I don't think it really matters that much just because you're going so fast on offense, scoring or three and out. I just think Heupel's done a pretty good job just kind of piecing in this roster together with some of the guys that he's lost from the other side of the portal. He's brought a couple of guys in, but I think Turnage is a nice body that can be a factor too. And Kamal Hayden from Auburn, I think he is someone else that can really come in and compete. But I'm with that corner spot, I'm really high on Warren Burrell. I think he's shown some really good flashes during his time at Tennessee. I think, honestly, he can give Alante Taylor at that corner spot a run for his money. And same thing with Kenneth George Jr. I think I know he had a hiccup a couple years ago off the field, but he's kind of responded to that pretty well, and he's kind of backed that up also with some plays too.
I couldn't agree more about Warren Burrell and Kenneth George. I know when Alante Taylor came in, it was him and Bryce Thompson, and we were like, oh, man, our corners are set for the next 3 to 4 years. And Alante looks great. I mean, he's a great athlete. He's got a great, you know, body and size for corner. For some reason for me, like, I don't know why it's maybe never clicked necessarily in coverage. Like, I think he's very physical. I think he plays hard, so I'm never going to knock that. But I couldn't agree more that from watching games, watching the spring game, when Kyler and I went and watched the entire practice, like, I thought George and Burrell did pretty well. So I actually feel like corner, we're going to have some pretty good depth. But I also agree with you that it's not necessarily a lazy answer, but I just don't like, I think, but if you take away the guys that left and bring in the ones that we brought in from the transfer portal, like, I don't think none of it's going to make that big of a difference, honestly, with defense. Like, it's kind of sad to say, but like, I mean, they just don't play a ton of defense in any college football anymore. I mean, Bama, LSU, some of these other,
Ohio State.
Some of these other big-time schools were like kind of our last hopes. And now it's kind of like just put the Band-Aid on, try to, you know, play prevent, or not kind of bend but don't break, but you're still going to give up. I mean, if Bama's giving up 30 points a game or whatever, I mean, why is there anyone else going to not be giving up 30, 40 points a game? So I don't really know if even defense even matters too terribly much.
Right. And I do like two other guys. I know we mentioned McDonald earlier, but
love him.
Jalen Tank McCullough, really high on him. Tremont Flowers, I think he's going to have a good year this year again. And Tyus Fields, Denico Slaughter, Deshaun Rucker. I think there's some depth there.
Yeah.
In the defensive backfield. And I can't wait to see Willie Martinez. Ton of respect for him. I know Kyler was there at Tennessee when he was coaching before. So I've always been impressed with Coach Martinez, but I think he's got some bodies to work with in the defensive backfield also.
I love Tamarian McDonald, and I hate it because when we went to practice, I don't know if he wasn't practicing that day or if I just didn't notice him, but then when I saw him in the orange and white game, I was like, who is this guy? Like, good athlete, good size, had really good pursuit, came up, would lay the wood pretty well. So I'm excited for him and just to kind of see, you know, kind of see how he can develop, because I think he could be pretty good. But like I was saying about defense, these coaches know they either need one or two turnovers, one or two, three, four negative plays a game, and maybe get one punt, because they're just trying to outscore people. And that's definitely what Heupel's trying to do. If he gets three stops a game, he's probably pumped about that. So,
yeah, I agree. I mean, that's all you really need when you look back last year, that like Alabama Ole Miss game. I mean, they both scored 40 to 50 points, and it was no defense whatsoever. So that definitely seems like the trend in college football moving forward. So speaking of high-powered offenses, let's go over to the offensive side of the ball in your depth chart. Now, number one question everyone's looking at is a quarterback position. You have Harrison Bailey as your starter right now with, you know, Milton and Hendon being his backups and Maurer all the way at fourth string. How did you come to that conclusion? Was it a lot of the spring game that pushed you in that direction, or anything that you're hearing?
All right. So with Brian Maurer, I'll start with him, and I probably need a new version just because ever since the NIL took effect July 1st, he came on my podcast and we just kind of talked about academics, NIL, and really impressed with him. I know we all know about his situation. I guess early last year he came out and was talking about how he almost took his life and everything. So I was not sure if, where Brian Maurer actually stood with all that going on in his life. So, but after talking to him, it seems like he's really turned the corner. And he also mentioned he's got a past history with Josh Heupel. He was recruited by Heupel when Heupel took the job at UCF first year, and he almost committed there. And so he's kind of like Joe Milton. Milton's got a past with Josh Heupel on the recruiting trail also. Heupel recruited and offered Milton when he was OC quarterbacks coach at Missouri. So I probably need to put Maurer above Hooker. I like Hooker. I know some people are kind of negative on him just based off some film. Maybe he's a run first type quarterback. That's okay. Maybe if he does have to play, that's what you're going to see from him. But I think right now it's just up in the air. I think Joe Milton is a guy that was brought in for a reason. So we'll see how that plays out. And we all know if you don't get developed at the quarterback position at a certain school, it's not necessarily a knock on the quarterback. Mm-hmm. But I think watching this spring, from what limited stuff we get to see in practice on the media side, there was a ton of quarterback development just from first couple periods that we get to see. And that's a whole lot more than the last couple of years from the previous coaching staff. And I think that just goes a long way. I think people like Brian Maurer, people like Harrison Bailey are going to benefit from that. And I know Harrison Bailey took over the official University of Tennessee Instagram account and went live a few weeks back, and he was walking through the locker room. I guess guys were finishing up working out, whatever, but you can tell he's got the players, his teammates on his side. And that kind of sticks out too, that he does have the locker room and the respect from various people in that video. So I think it's just wide open. I definitely think Brian Maurer is there, but I mean, he may have turned the corner, but it still comes down to actually producing when it counts, whether that be in a scrimmage or on an actual game day. So I think right now I would still keep Bailey right there, but I think Milton is a guy that we should keep an eye on, because even if he's not maybe the full-time starter, I think you can see him in certain packages or situations, short yardage, goal line, that type stuff. And I'll say this, before I came on, actually I did a podcast with Phil Still, and Phil's really good when he previews his magazine before it gets published about the coaches that he talks to. And he tweeted out a few months back that he talked to Alex Golish. And so I was asking him how that went, and he mentioned Golish was talking a lot about Milton. So that's another angle that we should keep an eye on with Joe Milton, since he's being, I guess, talked about pretty high from people like Golish.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, we talked about it in earlier podcasts, but I feel like the hill that Milton has to climb is just so huge with these guys that are already here that are performing well. That, you know, I coming out of spring thought Brian Maurer was the starter, like just the swag he had about him, the confidence, his ability, his, you know, how he played during the spring game. When, you know, before that spring game, seeing him in certain games, you're like, ah, he doesn't quite have it. He doesn't have it quite figured out. But watching that spring game, it looks like he's got it under control now. He knows what he's doing. And, you know, the connection with Heupel. So out of that spring practice, out of that spring game, I thought for sure he's a starter and it was his spot to lose. But, I mean, if Milton comes in here and is able to take that from whoever it is, from Maurer, from Bailey, then obviously he did a very impressive job.
I think I hear a lot of people when I'm talking to people, and they're like, why would we bring in Milton if they were happy with the people here? And I just disagree with that. Like, as a coach, it's your job to put the very, very best that you can on the field. So you might be somewhat happy with what you do have, but if you feel like you can upgrade in any way, or if you can add depth in any way, or just take a flyer on a guy, they see Milton, they're like, all right, 4-star coming out of high school, big kid, got all the attributes. Like, why would you not take him? Because if he comes here, and like we talked about with Taylor on an earlier podcast, like if he just doesn't have it up here, that's okay. But you know how all these coaches are. All these coaches feel like they can fix anybody. They can coach you up. They can do all this stuff. So I don't think it was necessarily an indictment on who we had. I just think it's smart by Heupel to be like, we got another bullet in the chamber. Let's see how he does when we get a hold of him. And so, I don't know. I personally think, I know when we went to practice, it looked like it was Brian Maurer's team the whole practice. That could have been just that practice, and he was getting the one reps, and that's what they – because I know they were rotating that. But, I mean, I definitely think Harrison Bailey has an opportunity. I love what I saw from him. I definitely think he's the best passer of who we saw between Hendon and Brian, because Brian's just – so up and down. He'll hit a great throw one time and then he'll sail it 10 yards over someone's head. So I think it's fascinating. I think it's one of the most fascinating things in my lifetime of watching to see who's going to start. And I just keep going back to the fact that, like, I'm just happy because I feel like we do have depth if someone doesn't play well or if somebody gets hurt. So, but I don't know. I'll be very interested when we go back to practice to see how Joe Milton looks for us in person. And then, I don't know. If you know, I guess we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'll say this also. These top coaches that run either air raid or veer and shoot offenses, they love options, especially at the quarterback position. And I think that's another reason why Josh brought in a guy like Joe Milton. And Gadsden Moore, the walk-on from UCF, I was talking to his high school coach the other day, and I mean, he's not going to be a starter or anything like that, but he's good for the locker room. And if guys transfer out, maybe earns that right to get a scholarship, because Josh is really high on him also. But these air raid and veer and shoot type coaches, that they just love options. I remember when JG Garantano went to Washington State earlier this year, I was talking with Coach Rolo Rolovich on my podcast, just, you know, what do you see in JG to come there? And he just said, well, he's got a ton of experience. Maybe it clicks. And, you know, with him having a couple other quarterbacks on Washington State's roster, he just said, I just want a hot hand. I don't care, you know, if you're hot for a couple games and you start to not do good, I want to put the next guy in. So I think Heupel and some of these other top coaches from a similar top tree kind of think like that also.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes, I mean, it makes a lot of sense when you break it down like that. But and also the guy coming from UCF, like, he can also be a sounding board for some of those quarterbacks in the meeting room, because he's been in the offense before. He understands what Josh Heupel likes, what he's looking for. So he can almost be like in the NFL, Ryan Fitzpatrick. That's an older guy who knows a lot about football and can just like help the younger guy progress and figure out what he needs to do. So
that's a really good point. And that I was thinking about this the other day too. It's kind of similar to Gadsden, the quarterback that came in from UCF. You look at a guy like Grant Furkin. He doesn't play much, but guess what? His brother played at Baylor, which is the same exact offense that Josh Heupel studied at Missouri, and he's implemented into his programs now. Maybe Grant is very familiar because his brother played quarterback in that Baylor type offense, and he could be a sounding board in the wide receiver room as well.
That's very true. I mean, Grant's a dang CEO himself, so he's probably the most mature guy you're going to find on that team, which would make a good sounding board. So we can jump over to the wide receivers. You know, I think we all, you know, Javonte Payton, Velus Jones Jr., Jalin Hyatt, like those are the three guys that are going to be stepping up. But I'm wondering, after that spring game, what we saw, if Jack Jancic doesn't get some actual playing time, because he was very impressive. It seemed like Bailey was on with him. I mean, he was throwing him deep balls the entire time. So who knows if Jack doesn't get a touchdown here or there this year? What do you think, Dan?
Well, that was good to see also, but it would not be surprised if he gets a few balls thrown to him that first night against Bowling Green, because Josh Heupel's going to throw it around that game, and he's probably going to unleash it a little bit where everybody kind of gets a touch. So we may see some action from Jancic in that game also. But I love it. I think the wide receiver unit is stacked. You look at a guy like Jalin Hyatt, who really had some flashes last year in an offense maybe that wasn't really catered to his skill set. And I think you could see him at the X position, or even when you see those stacks in this Josh Heupel offense, maybe he's turns into a slot at sometimes. I think Javonte Payton is a huge guy coming in from Mike Leach's air raid. And I was kind of researching him the other day, talking to Payton's old coach in high school and middle school. And he mentioned that we all know with Leach's air raid offense, and Payton, for people that think he may have committed to Mississippi State because of the air raid Mike Leach, he actually committed to Joe Moorhead. So he kind of went through some coaching changes. But going back to what his coach said, we all know Leach is air raid mesh heavy, right? And Heupel played for him in college, but he doesn't run mesh anymore. And I think that's why Payton kind of gravitated to a system like this, because I just don't think from the slot he's that mesh type guy to run those certain routes. And I think now with his speed, you can do the stacks with the slot type receiver and the X or a Z type receiver and get him on vertical shots too. So I think a guy like Payton is really going to come in here and has a pretty good chance to do something right away in this offense. But Bayless Jones Jr., another guy, I think he's going to continue how he ended last year. Really good talent, upperclassman, so you kind of know what you're getting out of him. Like to see what Cedric Tillman can do. I know Jim Chaney talked about him pretty highly last year. We all know that the season did not go how it you know, a lot of people wanted it to, but I think Cedric may have a chance to do something in this offense. Jimmy Holiday, another body, Ramel Keaton, he's back. So I just think there's a lot of options and a different type of skill sets to work with in the wide receiver room.
Yeah, that's what we talked about after leaving that practice that day. And I mean, Kyler and I both agree that I think there's so many options that it doesn't really matter who you're going to put in at wide receiver or running back for that matter. And they're all going to produce, you know, pretty well. I think it's a compliment to Heupel because I think he's going to put people in position, but I also just think it's a compliment to all those kids. I think all those kids are going to be, you know, pretty good players for Tennessee. Like I said, wide receiver room and backfield room. I mean, I couldn't have been any more impressed with all the running backs I saw. And, you know, hell, I loved one, and I found out that he was the guy that transferred from Maryville College. You know, so, I mean, that's just like, yeah, you know,
I like him, too. He's hanging in there. It'd be good to see him get some action.
Yeah, I mean, I just think the wide receiver – I mean, I guess offensively, and we can transition to that if you guys want, or Kyler, if you have anything to say on the running backs or the wide receivers. But, like, I just think the tight end is going to be kind of interesting to see if it's, you know, all Austin Pope or if we got some other guys coming in there. I mean, I remember talking back, and I loved oh, gosh, I forgot his name. Name the tight ends real quick. Not Jacob Warren, but –
Princeton Fant.
I love Princeton Fant. He's been there a while. I think he's good size. He balled out at practice when we were there. But, like, he's just been around the program for a long time. Like, I think he could be pretty valuable at times. I just don't know how much we're going to, you know, use the tight end and how much you think they're going to use the tight end.
In this offense, the tight ends would be used all the time. That's just how they do things. Like I said, I've been studying this offense, and it goes back to that Baylor offense that they just – it's that veer and shoot type principle, and they're going to go back to the orange and white game. I think it was Fant that on the interception, he was actually flexed out. And the reason why it was an interception is because he wasn't able to jump high enough to get it just because he's so big stature. But you're either going to flex these guys out, bring them in line, 12 personnel, 11 personnel, 21 personnel. You're going to see a lot of different things, but I think something that gets maybe not a lot of attention towards for this offense, for Heupel's offense, is that he likes to run the football. And saw that, yeah, in that open practice, he spent a good maybe 20-30 minutes so everybody could watch just running power and counter. He wants to perfect that because that's a huge part of his offense. I think tight ends will be huge. I can't wait to see what Jacob Warren does. I think he's a guy that has hands. I think he's bulked up quite a bit just because that's how Pruitt wanted to use him in that offense. But now that he's got a little bit of bulk to him, he still has the hands, and I think he could potentially be a factor in this offense. And Austin Pope, it's good to see him back because I think he's a guy that can – really be a key blocker, especially in the run game.
I know Kyler's itching to talk, and I know I'll let him go, but it's so funny you said that, because that was actually going to be one of my next questions, was how well do you think this team's going to run? And I've said it, and Kyler said it, like, everyone wants to think that Heupel's going to come in, throw it everywhere, and just pass. I know he's a smart guy, but, like, you have to run the ball to try to control the clock, give this defense some time, try to be balanced. I just think it's so important to run the ball, do your best to control the line of scrimmage. If you can't control the line of scrimmage, still do what you can on the ground game. So I'm so happy you said that, because I don't think we're going to be like Mike Leach and some of these other air raids where we're just throwing it 70 times a game and we're handing it off 15. I personally don't think. I think it's going to be a lot of running, play action, taking shots downfield, some dink and dunks. I'm glad you said that, because I think he knows how important it's going to be to run the ball.
Yeah, that's a great point, Reed. I'm glad you're talking about the running game. Makes me want to move into the offensive line. So the depth chart that you put out, it actually lines up exactly with what I said. after the spring game, the starters across the offensive line. So we are on the same page. There has been this, you know, connotation that we have no depth. We don't have any offensive linemen because some of the guys who left in the transfer portal. But when I look at these guys, when I look at the players that we have, we got a lot of depth. We got a lot of good players, and I'm really not nervous at all about this offensive line.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think it's a good, manageable offensive line. I think for all of the first-year head coaches since Philip Fulmer had his last year after the 2008 season, I think that Josh Heupel has the most to work with, especially from a depth perspective throughout the whole unit on the offensive line. I mean, you look at left tackle, Dane Davis has really come on. You got a guy like Calvert who's really going to push him too, would not count him out. And then Jerome Carvin, he's got a ton of experience. James Robinson, you got the Mays guys, center, right guard. I think that's pretty much well established right now how you're going to see that. And then right tackle, Darnell Wright. And, you know, Calvert can be right there too. And Jeremiah Crawford, he was signed by Heupel back in February. So maybe he's a JUCO guy that can come in and really provide something there on the depth end. But I think you're right. I think this is a pretty good offensive line. I think it's underrated. It kind of fits to what they want to do offensively, especially a guy like Dane Davis, who's can be a little bit agile at that left tackle position if they do decide to keep him there and make him the starter. But yeah, I think it's good. I mean, Carvin, he can play center also if needed be, if Cooper's hurt or banged up.
Yeah, I especially the interior, I feel like we have the most depth. Because like you said, Carvin and Spraggins, then Chris, which I'm not even going to try and say his last name because I'll mess it up. But like all of those guys are good guards and can also snap. Like they're also practicing that throughout practice. So the depth inside is key because there's going to be an ankle rolled up on. There's going to be somebody, you know, dealing with an injury at some point. So we're going to have depth on that interior line. It happens every year. I mean, my last year, my senior year, I was the only offensive lineman that played the whole year. Everyone else missed a game, had to, you know, be replaced. It was a revolving door on the rest of that offensive line. So depth is very important when it comes to that. But I'm very happy to see it. Now, we've gone through the depth chart. We're recording this this weekend before SEC Media Day. What exactly are we looking for to come out of SEC Media Day? I mean, is it just here's a chance for these guys to promote themselves? I mean, is there going to be something that everyone's searching for or everyone wants to hear from Heupel or the players that are going there? Just to, like, from a journalist's side, from a, you know, media guy's side of it, what exactly are we looking for out of SEC Media Day?
Yeah, with Valus Jones Jr. and Alante Taylor both going or joining Josh Heupel at SEC Media Days, I think it'd be neat to hear from Valus in a group setting with a lot of reporters, just because it's a chance to talk to him about this offense and maybe get his thoughts of it's a drastic change from last year. So I think that'd be good to hear from him. Alante, he's done well on the academic side. He's kind of earned that opportunity to represent Tennessee in Hoover. So it'd be good to hear how he's matured and done well during his time. But I think Josh Heupel, it'd be interesting to see how he handles a situation like this. I think Pruitt and Butch and the other coaches did a pretty good job. And I don't think we've had any like bad situations at SEC Media Day since Derek Dooley said, you're not going to push Tennessee around anymore. So I think Josh will come out there, seeing how he plays the media or handles the media. He's kind of short answered a little bit And it'll be interesting to see how many questions get fielded to him. And maybe he dives a little bit deeper into certain questions, talking about offense and all that good stuff.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, if he can give anybody a better understanding of his offense, you know, us fans would appreciate it. Now, he doesn't want to give too much away for those other coaches, but it's that Derek Dooley thing. Oh, boy. Didn't quite live up to that.
How long do each of the players and the coaches get? And then is it for media day, you're kind of almost – this sounds terrible, but, like, I'm not saying you in particular. I'm just saying kind of media. Like, you're just waiting to hear – not necessarily someone mess up, but maybe somebody say something that you didn't think they were going to, maybe a little nugget in there.
Yeah, so at SEC media days with the – well, I guess I'll start with the coaches. So the head coach will be in the main room for, I think it's at least a good 45 minutes, 30 to 45 minutes at least. And there's an electronic media room also. It's a small room, probably like 40 people in there for media personnel. And so it's more of a casual Q&A type deal. So then you have the players kind of more in a scrum type setting, like you would see after practice or whatnot. I don't know if it's going to be set up like that this year, just because they're really strict about this COVID protocol still, and they're limiting the number of people for media and trying to distance people that are there. So I think what you're going to probably see from a student athlete standpoint in the main room is, you could be behind a podium like the head coaches are, just to kind of keep that organized. But in terms of, I guess, listening to players and coaches for those nuggets, yeah, I mean, it's always huge to hear how they handle the media, because I think it's a big aspect. And I kind of go back to the Brian Maurer situation. You don't know who is going to be really well-spoken in these media settings. And maybe you get certain players that aren't as equipped to handle that. And that's why I think in this NIL age, it's going to be really neat to hear from different players as time goes on, because we all know that the university likes to keep it at a minimum of who actually talks to the media. So I think that's what I look for the most at SEC Media Day, is just hearing from certain or different people. Eli Wolf's a good example from a couple of years ago. Not the biggest name on the team, but it's kind of neat to see him be in that setting, finally get to hear from somebody like that.
Yeah, and ironic that he got SEC Media Day and then he ends up transferring.
Yeah.
Love Eli. Love that guy. Love Ethan too. Got a chance to play with both of them. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for this season. I, you know, really do like the depth charts you're putting out. Can't wait to talk about it more once we get into fall camp and get closer to the season starting and see exactly where we're at. And, you know, maybe whenever they announce a starter, I don't even know if they do it before the first game. They might just throw them out there. I very much appreciate you coming on, Dan. It was great having you. And great to get your insight on all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. Keep up the good work. I've came across your podcast, so you guys do a good job.
Well, thank you. Thank you. We're just trying to figure it out, so I appreciate you saying that. All right. Thank you guys so much for watching or listening, wherever you can find podcasts. Thank you to Dan again for coming on, talking some ball with us. If you have any questions, if you want to reach out, if you want some topics for us to cover, you can contact us, believeintennesseefootball@gmail.com, and a phone number 865-322-9232. Also rate, subscribe, like, share with your friends and family. Let them know what we got going on. Follow me on social media at Kyler Kurbison, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. As always, go Vols.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.